This is Whitney, and you're listening to the JCast on Jabberlog.
Welcome to Within the Trenches, true stories from the 911 dispatchers who live them.
This is Ricardo with Jabberlog on the JCast, and I'm sitting here with my co-host, Whitney, and this is episode number 11 of Within the Trenches. What's going on, Whit?
Hey, we're back for episode 11 today, Ricardo, aren't we?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
I'm very excited about this episode.
This is going to be a good one.
Very excited. It's going to be an interesting, knowledge-packed 30-minute session.
Yes, I am definitely excited for this. This week, we are with Cheryl, who is the police and fire dispatcher and CISM team member with SunCom of Yakima, Washington. How's it going?
Hi. It's going great today. Thanks so much for this opportunity. It's really exciting.
Yeah, thank you for joining us.
Well, like you said,
we're just laughing. We'll tell our listeners there's a little bit of a lag. So we're trying to identify how long this lag time is, and we're trying to introduce our questions to one another at an appropriate time. So just bear with us as we're trying to look at each other and say, are they going to come in with their question? Or that's just one of the problems when we don't have an in-house interview. We just have to make do with internet, and that's sometimes what happens.
Yeah, so sometimes the internet isn't always great, just like the equipment that we work with in dispatch.
Can I get a witness?
Oh, I'll be the witness there.
There you go. So how about you tell us, you know, to start out, how did you get into dispatching? Did you just fall into it, or how did it come about?
Well, I kind of fell into it. I had been getting my criminal justice degree at a local community college about 15, almost 20 years ago, and decided that I wanted to be a police officer. And then in the meantime, I had had children and didn't think it was a bright idea to work those kind of hours with that kind of danger with two little girls at home. Right. So I kind of moved out of the law enforcement field and decided I was going to work in private industry for a few years. And when they got older, I got back into my passion, which is law enforcement, but I chose to do it through 911 and dispatch that way.
Cheryl, can you tell us a little bit about where Yakima is in Washington, just so everybody gets a feel of where you're located at?
Yeah, we're about, I would say, an hour and a half, 2 hours east of Seattle. When people think of Washington, they think that it rains all the time and it's big city like Seattle.
Starbucks.
Yeah, definitely. And we don't live in a rainy climate. We are on the other side of the Cascade Mountains from Seattle. So we have a lot of agriculture and farms and orchards, and we're kind of in the desert. So
interesting. So I have a feeling that's going to play into some of the calls that we're going to talk about today and what your specialty is.
Definitely. In Yakima County, we have a, you know, fairly large population. It's like 222,000, a little over that. And that's with one major city of like 71,000. So most of our fire agencies are rural fire agencies. So there's a long response time for medical calls out in the county.
And your fire departments, are they like a paid on-call type of deal?
We have got our one main city of Yakima. They're paid firefighters. The majority of the rest of the agencies, the nine other agencies that we deal with, they're volunteer agencies. And so I believe they're paid per call or minimally anyway.
Yeah.
So they do have to respond to the station to get their equipment and then respond to the scene. So it could take quite a while sometimes.
Jeez.
And we had discussed in episode 10, we were talking with Brody about how most of our interviews so far have kind of fallen into a niche. So, you know, we had Barry in episode 5, was it?
It was episode 4.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So he talked about, or he was from Ireland, and he talked about kind of like an aeromed type of dispatch. Mm-hmm. And we moved on from there. And now Brody, our last episode, he talked about tactical dispatching when you're dispatching out in the field and assisting like a SWAT team or a call out like that. And what Cheryl is going to talk about with us today is she works with the aftermath of critical incidents. So Cheryl, so why don't you tell us a little bit about your center now? Explain just how everything runs, how many people you have working in there at a time, and we'll go from there.
Okay. Well, our center is the main PSAP for Yakima County. And so every 911 call in Yakima County comes to our center. And with 222,000 people in the county, if we get like a motor vehicle accident on one of our major highways, we could be bombarded with calls. And there would only be two call takers on. That's our minimum on some days. And so they get overloaded. And the dispatchers then have to take the overflow from 911 while dispatching for two law enforcement agencies and the 10 fire agencies that we work with. So,
which was shocking to me because when we were discussing this on the phone, I had mentioned to you that where Ricardo and I work, we'll have four people in here, but whoever's on Prime, our main police channel, they're so focused on officer safety that rarely will they pick up a 911 call, or really will they pick up a call. And it's even more rare that they'll even pick up a 911 call. So that is just, you had mentioned at one point that they were picking up a domestic and dispatching it out at the same time.
Oh yeah, I've done that. Yeah, we kind of have to, especially as low as we are right now, we're supposed to have 30 employees total between call takers and dispatchers, and we're missing four on each side right now. So we're trying to hire, but like every other agency in the dispatcher. I'm sorry.
Is there a clear division between a call taker and a dispatcher? Does one have more training than the other? Do you float back and forth between the two?
Right now in our call center, all of our dispatchers are cross-trained to be police, fire, and 911. The call takers mainly stay as call takers, but there is a route for them to get into dispatch besides coming from the outside. We're on separate union contracts, which is a little complicated, but basically we work as one big team. Because you can't dispatch calls if the phones are ringing off the hook. So,
yeah. Interesting. Now, let's go into your CISM and how you became involved in that. What incidents in your life led you to that? And then we'll take that a little bit deeper.
Okay. Well, I've spent 4 years as a call taker and now 2 years in dispatch. And my first couple of years as a call taker were a little rough. It just seemed like I had that black cloud over my head. There could be like three of us working. And if three lines were ringing, one person would have a barking dog call. One would have, you know, a hang up call. And, you know, I'd talk to the guy that was on fire. I mean, it would just be my luck. And, you know, I would always question that and always think that's just weird. Why me? But, you know, everything happens for a reason, because that's what got me involved in CISM and to be on this team. So about a year in, I suppose, I took kind of a role out in one of our rural areas. It was a 2-year-old that was run over in the driveway of their home. And it was pretty rural. It was about 25 minutes for a responder to get there. Uh-huh. And really, there wasn't much as far as emergency medical information I could give them because of the injuries. So basically, I just had to stay on the phone with family members and try and calm the scene down and do what I could do to keep everybody as calm as they could be in that situation until somebody got there. Right. And so at the time I was like every dispatcher that's new, I'm like, I can handle this. I'm supposed to be able to handle this. That's my job.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But I started noticing symptoms after that, like not sleeping and forgetfulness. I'm one of those people who never locks their keys in the car. And I think it probably happened to me like 5 times in a year.
Are you serious?
So, I always know where my purse is. I never lose things. Uh-huh. And I couldn't remember where things were. And I would have like intrusive thoughts sometimes, you know, I would think about bad calls when I was at the mall shopping with my kids. It was just a little, but I didn't pay a lot of attention to it. I knew there was something wrong, but I didn't know what was wrong. And so like any, you know, anybody else, I did the things that I thought were going to help, which, you know, zoning out in front of trash TV and not talking about it at all. Cause I don't, you don't want to cry. Heaven forbid you cry. And, you know,
You're not introduced to ways to process that kind of information in training. It's not that it's not discussed, but until you're really in that position, it's really hard to figure out what you're, you know, what mechanism you're going to use as a dispatcher to kind of get yourself cycled back into the real world. So I understand how you would just be stuck in this zone. Like, how do I process all these feelings?
Exactly. And I dare to say that that happens a lot in our field because we are primarily women and in the dispatch field. Sorry, Ricardo, we are. But we're dealing with a lot of first responders who are men. And so they deal with things in ways, and we don't want to be the weak ones. We don't want them to walk in while we're crying. And so it is hard to process. It's hard to understand that they deal with this too. And once I got that, it was much better.
Yeah, I get that.
So about a year after that first call that I was having issues with, because this kind of stress and this kind of trauma is cumulative. It's not a one-time incident. If you have five bad calls, the sixth one may not be that bad, but it's going to bring the last five back. So about a year after that first one, I had a rollover motor vehicle accident, and it involved the traumatic death of an 8-month-old. And again, it was in a rural area with a really long response time. And an instantaneous death. There was no EMD to be given. I didn't have any medical information for them at all. And part of it was because I had a really good reporting party who was very descriptive and gave me a good picture of that scene. And it just stuck in my head. And so after that call, again, I stood up and I said, you know, I need a break this time. We were a little overstaffed. I mean, we're never overstaffed, but we had a swing on that day. And so I decided I was going to go for coffee. I was going to make a coffee run, took everybody's order, and I left the building to go get coffee and went to the mini mart to get cash to pay for coffee. And I forgot the PIN number on my debit card that I'd had for 20 years. And I just started crying in the mini mart. And of course the mini mart employee thought I was insane.
Yeah. Great. They call 911 because they think,
there's a lady crying at the cash machine.
No, that's Cheryl. She's with us.
Exactly. All he said to me was, honey, are you okay? So I just said no. And I called back to work and I said, I'm not okay. I don't know what to do. I'm not okay. And so they had a, what they call a diffusing. And I've learned all these fancy CISM terms now, and I know what they do. But that night when I went to that diffusing, I was in a room with about 30 firefighters, paramedics, and police officers.
Yeah.
And they were having problems with the call that I took. They were having problems because they were on scene. And so in my head, I was there for them. I wasn't there for me. I was fine. Yeah. So I didn't get a lot out of that. But then with that comes the responsibility to come back a couple of days later for what they call a debriefing. Mm-hmm. And that's basically a breakdown of how you're doing after the fact, how you're doing a couple of days later. And I broke down and cried and said, I'm not okay. This is not okay with me. I don't want this job anymore. And I love that job. I love to be able to help people, but I didn't think I could do it anymore. So the thing that they gave me that day were just handout sheets of paper. And they said, you don't have to read these, put them in your glove compartment. They'll help you later. And they did help me later. I went back and looked at them and they had all these symptoms on there and I was checking them off. I had all of them. I mean, I didn't sleep. I had intrusive thoughts. I was having bad dreams. Mm-hmm. And so I decided to take part of our employee assistance program, which yep. is basically a counselor you can go talk to.
Okay.
And she asked me how much sleep I had had, and I couldn't say that I had slept more than 4 hours straight in about a year. And wow. she said, well, that might be part of your problem, sister. So she suggested over-the-counter sleeping pills just to get me back into a place where I could sleep for more than 4 hours at a time. And I resisted, of course, but I needed to work. I mean, we had just bought a house. I had, you know, one kid in college and one still in high school. And so I tried it. And after I had slept about 3 days in a row for more than 8 hours at a time, I got it. I was better. I didn't lose my keys. I could remember my PIN number. So, I took that back to work with me and told my boss, and I said, I think I'm better. I don't know why I'm better. And she said, well, let's find out why you're better. And she sent me to a CISM class to see if I could bring something back to the center that would help. And so we had some members that were trained in peer support before this, but now we have an actual policy and we have an actual team that gets called out. And I think we're really doing some good in our center.
Does your center have to request that to be called out after a critical incident? Or is that something that's just, if this or this incident happens, you come out no matter what?
Mm-hmm. In our policy, there are about 5 different things that could happen that says you will notify the CISM team. There's no question about it. The supervisor will be responsible for that. And then there's about 4 more that if, you know, something happens and you see that there may be a problem, you're going to call out the CISM team, and the supervisors are held responsible to call us out.
That's interesting, because I think I would be really reluctant just because of, I have that mentality that, you know, I think I should be able to make it through. I should be able to filter through all these things. And so that's good that you have that and it is called out. I can't believe that nobody identified with you at that meeting. Not your debriefing, the first one. What did you identify?
Yeah, the diffusing.
The diffusing. I can't believe either at that or even at the debriefing, nobody looked you in the eye and said, it's okay to be pissed, Cheryl. You can be so angry about this call, but this is how we're going to work through it. Instead of just kind of handing you paperwork and being like, here, I'm thankful that you were able to figure it out on your own. But some people, I think, might.
And I think that they tried to do what they could, but like you, I was hesitant. I didn't.
Yeah.
You know, I didn't think that either I needed it or I was afraid of what would happen if I said I needed it. So I didn't want people to call me crazy, but now I'm pretty comfortable with that. I lost my marbles once and I found them again. And now I'm going to help other people from losing their marbles. We're good with that.
Yeah. That is good. Cheryl, talk about when we were on the phone, you mentioned an incident at Target that kind of stuck with me. And I thought about it the last couple of days and thought, you know what? I bet a lot of dispatchers have things like this happen and you kind of push it aside and keep chugging along. But can you talk about that for just a minute?
Definitely. After that second call, our center, like most centers, every couple weeks, it seems you've got a wedding to go to or a baby shower or something you're buying a gift for. So I was in Target in the baby section and buying a baby gift for a coworker. And I got those intrusive thoughts about the last motor vehicle rollover accident that I had. And I could not get the pictures out of my head. I just started crying. And again, the people in Target are thinking, there's a crazy lady crying in the baby section at Target. I stayed away from baby shopping and anything that was going to bring back those memories. I wouldn't take certain roads because I knew what had happened on those roads. So I would go the long way around so I didn't have to pass those. And those are things that are signs that you're not handling things the way you could be. I mean, I just want people to know that it gets better than that. I mean, you can do better than that. You can keep yourself healthy.
It's so brave of you to talk about your situation and open up with the things that were kind of real near and dear to your heart and that were really hurtful for you, because I still really don't think that a lot of dispatchers identify with a very real possibility that they could be struggling with PTSD. Exactly. I think that, you know, we hear about PTSD a little more in the media now with our returning war veterans and how horrific the things that they had to see. But I really think that dispatchers can have like secondary PTSD because the stuff that we hear and you have to just, do you agree with me on that, or is that a little bit far stretched?
No, I totally agree. They're doing studies now, finally, on dispatchers. It's even taken the professionals kind of a long time to figure out that we do get secondary trauma from those incidents. Because as a dispatcher, as a call taker, you have to be able to make a picture in your head of that scene and figure out, because somebody could tell you what road they're on, but if they don't give you the description of the road, then you're not positive that's where they are. Because with cell phones, right, they could be anywhere now. Exactly. So you have to make that mental picture in your head. And when you get those pictures in your head, sometimes they're worse than the real scene. So you need a way to work through that. And CISM is the way to do that. The defusing and the debriefing that I went to, I don't want people to think that it didn't do me any good, because it did. And if I would have taken more advantage of that situation, I think it could have done me a lot more good.
No, it's good that, that did help out for you. You know, you're talking about how, you know, the imagination, that's something that can be even worse than what you're listening to, because you're imagining everything. You know, your imagination is so strong, and it's just the things that you can think of can come out just crazy in your head. But there was a study that I saw in one of the emails that, you know, we were all sending back and forth about the PTSD and everything. It was one that you had brought up. I found a link to it. It's called 911 Dispatchers Experience PTSD Symptoms 2. And one of the quotes that they add in here was just some stats. It says about 16% of the calls dispatchers identified as their worst involved the unexpected injury or death of a child. So what you were talking about earlier with your call, you know, it's interesting how it can affect us that much. You know, you're talking about how you didn't buy baby clothes for a while. And for me myself, when I've taken calls like that deal with children, you know, I've got an 8-year-old and a 1.5-year-old. And as soon as something comes to close to one of those ages, or even just a child in general, you know, I relate to that and I could fall right into those statistics. It also goes on to say that about 13% were suicidal callers, 10% were police officer shootings, and another 10% involved the unexpected death of an adult. So, it definitely takes a toll on us.
It does. And not only takes a toll on us, it takes a toll on our family members as well. We at our center now with the policy, we also go into training. We try and help our employees deal with their stress before it gets there. We want to make sure they're healthy enough to take that bad call, so that way they get better faster. And part of that is giving them information for their families, things that their families can do to help them through that. Because like I was talking to Whitney on the phone the other day about my husband, it's not fair for me to come home and dump all this really ugly garbage on him.
Yeah.
And so that's why I pay a therapist a lot of money to listen to my garbage. And that way me and my husband can go have fun. We don't have to talk about my job.
No, I definitely know what you mean. I've gone home, and I know I've mentioned it several times in other episodes. You know, I've gone home, I talked to my wife about certain things, and she's just kind of looking at me like, I know you don't really understand, but you know, as long as you're able to hear me, you know, that still helps me out. But
exactly. It's always nice to have somebody you can talk to. And that's part of the information we give the families is just to listen. Don't try and fix us, and don't try and fix our jobs, because that you're never going to do that. Just listen to us.
Right.
What's something that you can relay to listeners, Cheryl, if they're trying to access this information, or if they're trying to bring it to their center, if they don't have a good debriefing program, what's a piece of advice you can offer to them? How, you know, if they can reach out to you, or if there's a nationwide support group or something like that? Just if they don't have it in their own center, where can they go for a little bit of help? Do you have any idea?
Oh, definitely. They can always contact me. And I have two other team members that I can't forget to mention, Katie Ybarra and Stacy Garcia. They are awesome. They are wonderful ladies that have done this for a long time. And they, like me, they're on call 24 hours a day, our center, and for other centers that need us. And so to commit to take your cell phone to bed is a big deal when you're a dispatcher.
No kidding. And you're not playing words with friends.
Exactly. But they can either contact me, which would be fine. I could give them information. And our manager at the at SunCom, they don't like to send out a copy of our policy unless it's like to an agency, but you can have your director get a hold of our director and we'd be more than happy to send you a copy of our policy and our team requirements. But I also wanted to mention that we've received a lot of training. We're lucky enough to have this organization that comes into Washington pretty often, trainings, and they're the Green Cross Academy of Traumatology. And you can find them at greencross.org. It's not .com because that's a medical marijuana site and that's probably not what you need when you're stressed out.
Nice. Yeah, self-medicating isn't the best route.
Yeah. No, it never is. But yeah, greencross.org, they have a lot of information about trauma, and compassion fatigue is what a lot of people are calling what we do. It's like the cost of caring for others, nurses and teachers. When you care about your job and you care about helping people, it's going to leave a mark on you no matter what. Yeah. It's going to leave a mark on you forever. How you handle that and how you carry that mark is up to you. So.
Yeah, it's good that you mentioned that, the compassion fatigue. There's an article that's been going around Facebook and on a lot of the dispatcher fan pages. It's called Hazards of Being a 911 Dispatcher. And there is a section in there that's just based on that, compassion fatigue. There's also CARES and vicarious trauma that they have detailed out. And I'll end up putting a link to that. It was a really good article. And you pretty much, you know, touched the whole thing there with the compassion fatigue. But yeah, it's a good article that came out.
There are also tests on, well, you can find them online. It's about compassion fatigue and risk for burnout. They're just little self-help tests, you know, mark the box and add up your score. And you can see where you are on that scale and just maybe where you can get some help or maybe just improve your diet or I just wanted, you know, to make sure that people knew about how to get ready for the kind of trauma that we hear. Make sure that you are eating right. I mean, I know that's horrible to say, but all the things that your mother tells you to eat right, drink a lot of water and exercise, those are the best ways to get ready for taking a bad call or having a bad incident on the radio. If you've had enough sleep, sorry, go ahead.
No, that's okay. I was just going to say, just for all our listeners to know, we will on the blog, we'll have links posted to all three of those things that we've talked to recently. The first one will be the emergency responders and PTSD. The second one will be the hazards of being a 911 dispatcher. Those are both articles. And we'll have a link to the greencross.org. Just so people can start identifying with, you know, some help if they need it.
That would be great. I hope that other dispatchers can use it as much as we do, because I know that we use it a lot at our center and I can see the progress we've made.
Awesome.
That is great. And that is going to be, we're going to wrap up this episode. Thank you very, very much for joining us. This was excellent information for everybody to take in and, you know, get a hold of you if, you know, they need help out there, because we do need someone to talk to. You know, it's not good for us to just hold it in and, you know, be proud.
Yeah, I agree. It was really nice having you on the show, Cheryl. And I know that that's probably just part of your recovery and you're getting through all of this is talking to people about it. So it probably helps you a little bit on the side too.
It is. Thank you guys so much for having me and thank you for finding this important.
Of course. And As always, everybody can get a hold of us through email, and that is the jcast@thejabberlog.com or wttpodcast@gmail.com. You can follow us on Twitter at Jabberlog, and you can find all of these posts and all the other articles for Within the Trenches on thejabberlog.com. Thank you very much.
Thanks.
You just listened to Within the Trenches on the JCast. If you have any questions or would like to be a guest on the show, send an email to thejcast@thejabberlog.com.